Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. This is Adam of Monkey Tennis fame telling you that Stephen Mangan of I'm Alan Partridge, Green Wing and Episodes fame will be our special guest at the London show of our Mid-Evening Matters tour. It's coming up at King's Place on the 9th of September, and you're about to hear from me and the rest of the Monkey Tennis guys with a few more details about this very exciting tour. Hello, friends and listeners. It's us again. We're still here backstage at Comic-Con.
Help us. We've
walked through the wrong exit and been stuck here for 3 weeks now.
I'm so thirsty. I'm so hungry.
And we haven't seen Jed for days.
We're so lost.
I need a poo.
But before we get on with today's episode, we just wanted to tell you once more about Mid-Evening Matters, our tour coming up this September. Tom Stab can now run you through the dates.
Little pause there whilst he just reminds himself.
Yes, thank you very much, Adam. I didn't know you were going to throw to me. So on the 7th of September, we're going to be in Bristol at the Wardrobe Theatre. On the 8th of September, we're going to be in Manchester at the Lowry Theatre. And on the 9th of September, we're going to wrap it up at King's Place in London.
Pretty exciting. And you can get all the details for that on monkeytennispod.com.
So a cosplay Comic-Con themed question to the group, as we are still here, hence the background noise. If you were going to dress up as an Alan character for this live show, not saying that you will, and certainly not saying that ticket purchases will be refunded if you don't, but what character would you go for?
Ooh, good question. Can I start?
You can.
I'd go as Michael, but I'd go as the Michael version where Alan turns up to his front door and I would walk around with a cup of beans.
Yeah, that's good, that's good.
And maybe a door as well, and a spoon.
Yes. And maybe a large hairy biker following me around.
Yeah, a large hairy biker following me around. It's like a two-person cosplay.
Yeah, yeah.
As we're covering Mid-Morning Matters Series 2 on this tour, I'd probably go as a Psychic Simon, if only to dust off a decade-old Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah, that's a good plan.
Not a hemp T-shirt or a hemp shirt, even.
Nick, what about you?
I'm still thinking. Have you got one?
Well, I think I wouldn't want to choose this myself, but I think the ultimate Alan cosplay is probably having the peephole Pringle, the vulcanised rubber underpants, or maybe the traffic cones pointing through as well. I think that's the one, isn't it? It's the Tony Hayes lap dancing dream sequence Alan.
I changed
ultimate cosplay.
I changed mine. Can I go as a giant beef eater bear?
You certainly can, Tom. The choice is yours.
There is always the risk of stabbing, though. Yeah. Yeah.
You can get them on a bus, though, at least.
Yeah. Coming back to Nick now for his choice.
He's had plenty of time to think about it.
I think I would go as Susan, because I've got a lovely singing voice, and I think I could wear her look quite well. So I'm going Susan.
Genuinely harrowing. So thanks, everyone. Please do join us. Tickets and information about the tour, monkeytennispod.com. And now, on with the episode. North Norfolk
Digital. Monkey tennis? This is great banter. Hot, ham. Monkey tennis? Radical. Awesome. Mega. Are you on an E? Monkey tennis?
Yeah.
I'm spinning plates here, mate, I'll be honest. Monkey tennis?
There have been times when I've been more rubbery than turgid.
Monkey tennis?
Tits bits. Tit bits.
Yes, and yes. It's just an idiom.
You're an idiot.
Ooh, that's mustard. Monkey tennis?
Sustaining and maintaining our core listenership in an increasingly fragmented marketplace.
Hello again, friends, and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Look at my red nose.
Nick Older.
A slag's tan.
And Tom Stab.
I've been goaded by a fat, damaged man with one lung into a boxing match.
So, if you were listening last week, you'll know that we're tackling Alan's contributions to comic relief over the years. Last week, we did everything he did in the 90s, and today we'll be looking at the 2000s, but up to
the noughties.
Up to 2017.
The noughties and the teens, or whatever.
Spanning two decades, if you like. One thing to mention is that as this is obviously all tied in part and parcel with comic relief, we will be making a donation ourselves as a sort of thank you for comic relief for bringing more Alan to the screen. So we begin in 2001, where I believe Alan is ready, about to square up against Peter Kay's Boxer.
Yeah, that's right. So so we last saw Alan in Comic Relief in 1999. So between then and this appearance in 2001, the only appearance that I can come across is that he was on the British Comedy Awards. So again, this is kind of an island of Partridge because it's preceding I'm Alan Partridge Series 2, which came the following year.
Was that presenting an award?
It says here as a musical performer. So maybe it's doing a similar kind of medley type thing.
It's interesting to note as well, like, I know we're talking about the Comic Relief specials specifically, but most people think of, you know, a couple of series and there isn't much more to it. When you look at actually the things that he's done over the years, we're going through Wikipedia now, there is so many entries that actually he doesn't disappear from screens for that long.
Well, I think that was a general observation I had doing this comic relief research. It's like, it's quite a clever way to keep the character relevant and visible. So any years where it's essentially a down year from a sitcom or a chat show, he's at least in a comic relief. So he's always there in the kind of like in the public consciousness.
Yeah, and the thing is that probably wouldn't be a strategic thing as such. He probably just gets called up and asked if he will do it, and if the call didn't come, he wouldn't be looking for something to do.
I guess it partly goes with it's every other year anyway, so it just kind of, it just happens to work out quite well. So with this one in 2001, so obviously we've kind of done this based on mostly there are YouTube links to all of these years, but actually this one is also on the I'm Alan Partridge DVDs. So the version of this on DVD is slightly longer than the version that you can find on the Red Nose Day YouTube channel. So there is a first section here when Alan is introducing what's going on. So where we meet Michael and Alan in this gym in Manchester. So he starts off e-by gum, so he's using the Manchester accent and phrases, like a bit like when he's talking to the builders in I'm Alan Partridge Series 2, basically. I think it's the way he thinks he has to ingratiate himself to what he considers working class people by using their accents and their phrases.
Or just northern people in general.
Basically. He's basically scared of people that are working class and or northern.
Yep.
He's walking kind of around the boxing ring, explaining what he's doing there, and he refers to a young boxer that he walks past, saying that it's better he's pummeling that bag than pushing a man through a chip shop window.
Wow. So specific as well.
Yeah. Well, he's just kind of drawn what's a kind of northern working class stereotype or something. Michael appears dressed as a town crier.
there's a bit in the second part, which obviously is the only bit that I've seen, where Alan kind of refers to Michael,
and obviously you don't get the explanation or the setup.
No, and Peter Kay's character is like, well, you can't use him, he's pissed or whatever like that. You just kind of see in the corner Michael dressed as a town crier or a Lord Mayor or whatever.
He's dressed as a town crier, he's got the bell and everything.
Brilliant.
But Alan goes on to explain he was dressed like that for something that basically they were going to do, which isn't now happening. Also, Michael thinks they're fundraising for children in need. Alan then goes to bring out another boxer from the gym called Adam, not to be confused with the host. And it turns out that Alan and Adam have met before, because Adam stole Alan's car and Alan makes him apologise live on air. And whilst that's happening, you see Michael crack open a can of lager in the background.
Brilliant. Oh,
and that brings us up to speed with what you guys have now
seen. I really want to see that. You've sold that brilliantly.
It's really good.
There's some really good stuff in there.
It's a shame that they haven't put that on the full Comet Relief channel. I don't really know why.
Would you say that is arguably better or as good as what's to come in terms of this 2001 section?
I think it enriches the whole thing because it kind of explains why Michael's dressed as a town crier.
So when you get to the bit that is on the YouTube, just before it cuts back to Alan in the boxing ring, you've obviously got the hosts in the Comic Relief studio. And my first observation was, how fresh-faced does Vic Reeves look in this? He looks like a 20-year-old Alan Rickman.
Well, I thought the same thing about Peter Kay. He looks quite fresh and young and thin in this.
Yeah, very true. Although he is later described as a fat, damaged man with one lung.
Yeah. So Peter Kay is Tony Maloney in this sketch. Mm. And then Alan, for some reason, says, Tony Maloney stole a pony.
And so, by this point, what was the situation with Phoenix Knights? Had it come out? Were people familiar with Peter Kay, or do you think he was very much...
I was going to say Peter Kay is almost certainly, I would say, is the better known out of him and Coogan now. I would have thought. Google Trends. I went back to 2005, which is roughly as far back as it goes. And Peter Kay over time is certainly the more prominent of the two. I think there's very rare occasions where Steve pips him in the Google Trends post, but it is very territorial. I noticed so. Peter Kay takes Australia, South Africa, and most of Europe, but Coogan wins America, South America, the Philippines, Eastern Europe, and bizarrely, Portugal.
I can't believe that Peter Kay has travelled has travelled outside of the UK. He's very UK humour, it's very UK centric.
Yeah.
And also, sort of, he hasn't really done films or, you know, other big TV shows that have translated, whereas Coogan obviously has and has been in film.
Yeah, and things like Philomena have been massively successful and won awards and stuff as well.
Certainly Coogan is the more prominent in non-English speaking countries or places where English speaking is less likely to occur.
Out of interest, Nick, asking about Phoenix Knights, it looks like the first episode of Phoenix Knights was January 2001. So this would have been right at Peter Kay's fame around Phoenix Knights. Obviously, he was a known entity before then, but I think this was the start of his massive rise, I would say.
Yeah, so it's probably fair to say it was early in the trajectory, because obviously it just went from almost a bit in the same way the In-Betweeners started, you know, respectably and grew massively. I'm sure the same
exponential growth
is also the same for Phoenix Knights.
So as you mentioned, there are a lot of undertones here of basically an entitled southerner generalising, which we at Monkey Tennis are not fans of.
I don't want to get bogged down in this whole north-south thing again.
But I did wonder if that's, you know, they're trying. Perhaps that's something that both Peter and Steve were trying to illustrate a deeper point here in this sketch. And
I would think so,
me wonder, who wrote the sketch? Do you think it was Peter's writers? Was it Alan's writers? Was it a mixture of the two, do you think?
I'm going to go with Partridge.
Yeah,
it's a Partridge-led segment, definitely.
Yeah, I guess Peter Kay is very much an incidental character in the Partridge universe.
I'm sure he contributed in terms of, you know, when rehearsing and notes and things like that, but I would say it's predominantly Partridge.
Side note, how good would a Partridge-Phoenix Knights crossover be?
Oh, yes.
I think that could be fantastic.
Yeah, really good.
That's commissioned.
That would work.
Right. Let's continue to imagine that in our own heads, on our own time.
So
is that like fan fiction?
I was going to say Norfolk Knights, but that's actually already been done, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a
North Norfolk Knights.
So Tony Maloney, he calls Alan Andrew, which is great. He's been called Alec over the years as well.
I was going to say, in terms of what he calls Alan, that's only the beginning.
Later.
It gets worse.
Because Alan then drops in an A-up into the conversation. So these kind of Mancunian or Northern or like even... Well, I think actually there's a section where Alan's basically trying to be kind of like Mancunian and he's like, it's Yorkshire or whatever. Basically, Alan's trying to ingratiate himself, but getting it wrong anyway.
Yeah, of course.
Which is riling Tony up. So then Tony calls him Dickhead, which I also really enjoy.
Dickhead.
Tony angers much more easily than Alan's used to, isn't he? Like, you know, Alan's used to winding up guests, but it takes a few minutes, whereas Tony is sick of it.
Oh, I would say that Alan is visibly scared of Peter Kay's character in this.
Oh, yeah.
Peter/Tony is quite unprofessional, I would argue. Mm. In this, this is a live television broadcast for Comic Relief. He's very aggressive, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, Alan is a presenter, you know.
And he's failed to control his guests.
able to control his guest. Tony works in a gym. Why should he know what he's supposed to do?
I'll tell you who else is unprofessional. Michael. He's hanging around on the ropes at this point, visibly pissed.
Yep. And when Alan asked Michael to move his car because it's blocking a load of people, Michael's too drunk to do it.
Well, it's blocking the Meals on Wheels, isn't it?
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
that's it.
So then there's a bit of a battle of the charities where they're basically arguing which is providing more for the needy.
They're not starving, really. They're just hungry.
Yeah. I was very glad that Simon Greenall playing Michael was in a lot of these clips to make it a bit more rooted in Alan's world rather than just being one person and put in a new scenario.
Peter Kay's character, Tony Maloney, says to Alan he's been handed it on a plate. He's had everything handed to him. Alan's response to that is claiming that he's worked in an orange juice factory.
When he was a student. Yeah.
But it does show,
it's never mentioned anywhere else, Alan's stint in an orange juice factory.
It does show that Tony is not above generalising too as well. He's like,
But don't forget though, Tony did hear Alan on the phone hoping he's going to get a chat show out of this. Yeah. So I really like that. We were talking about in the one in 1999, it's potentially Alan is in the Alan universe. Mm-hmm. Alan is seeing these comic relief opportunities as a way to get his career back on track with the BBC every time.
These comic relief specials none of it's mentioned in iPartridge, is it? The stuff that he does for comic relief,
I think the one in 95 where he's debagged, I think.
Mentioned. Yeah, you're right.
This basically escalates into violence very quickly, doesn't it? So you pretty much leave him in this segment ready to face one of Tony Maloney's boxers when we head back to him later on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why you see Alan's character always being kind of scared and distrusting and nervous around the working classes, because he knows there's a residual threat of violence because
he's literally been bruised.
Yeah.
When you cut back to him, he is in a trademark Alan tiny shorts. So, question to the group: do you think that's his preference, or is that just lost property at a young man's boxing club?
I think it's spare kit, isn't it? I reckon.
Yeah. A and B, we've got two, and he's picked the short shorts.
There's not a lot of dialogue here. It's effectively just descends into a bit of a brawl. But obviously, I presume everyone noticed that the boxer is Paddy McGuinness.
Yeah, yes. I thought it was, but it's not.
I didn't spot that.
Now, Nick, that disappoints me, because you have a bit of a penchant for using a Bolton accent when hammered, don't you?
Yeah, but I'm not going to appear like some kind of entitled southerner by doing it on a podcast now when I'm stone cold sober.
We discussed the other night and you promised that you would give us some Bolton accent for the podcast.
It's funny to say it when drunk. It doesn't work when I'm sober.
Mate, who was drunk? None of us are drinking.
I think me and Jed had a beer.
Oh, you had one beer and you were agreeing to everything.
I was briefly mindless.
Anyway, it's brilliant because he lands one punch and he looks so pleased of himself.
He does land the punch, but it's while the other boxer is looking away, completely distracted. Alan sees an opportunity, goes for it, nails him, and then gets battered.
To be fair to Michael, because he is drunk and he couldn't move his car, but he is straight in when it's time to get handy.
As soon as it becomes apparent that it's not going to go well for Alan.
But as we know, Michael does, when things start to threaten to become violent, he does kind of go into stab, kill, stab, twist, kill mode.
Yeah. Oh, well, he hits the opponent with a bell. And I'm pretty sure Michael yells something about Fight Club as he's diving into the ring, but I kept rewinding. I couldn't make out what the words were, but that's what it sounded like to me. But
if you want to listen to that and have a guess, then please do let us know. Yeah. thepartridgepod@gmail.com. We're keen to work it out.
But it's descended to a four-man brawl.
Yep. Is that 2001 dealt with? Is it 2001 and Alan Odyssey?
I think that's 2001 and it's a violent end. Yes.
Yep. So we're on to 2005.
Yes, the 11th of March.
Where he opens by going, aha! I thought, so he does do it now.
Oh, yeah.
He's probably renegotiated the rights by this point.
He probably has. And he announces the death of Michael Flatley almost straight away. And also a bigger tragedy in his eyes that they've run out of Comic Relief t-shirts.
His jacket is incredible in this as well, if you do get a chance to watch
the stripy
video.
Number, isn't it?
Yeah.
So to give a bit of context, he's actually presenting a segment in the studio this time, isn't he? He's been sort of upgraded from outside
broadcast.
Yeah,
so this is quite different from what we've seen before. But again, in the kind of Partridge timeline, this comes, 3 years after I'm Alan Partridge Series 2, and all of a sudden he's legitimately back on the BBC hosting a segment.
I'm not sure it bears any kind of discussion in terms of how did he get here, because obviously it doesn't make any sense.
I know, it's just a bit of fun.
But
Michael Flatley has snagged his tights on a nail and died.
Now, he calls him Lord of the River Dance.
The thing that I noticed most from this, and it's picked up in quite a few YouTube comments on this video, is how sort of unresponsive the audience is to this. I don't think they really understand maybe who Alan is.
It's a bit flat, isn't
it's
it?
It's really flat. Yeah. And I think he is delivering, you know, kind of classic Partridge. It's very good. I find this section pretty funny, but the audience is just not going with it at all.
I think it seems fairly obvious that this was actually delivered live. And I think that explains a lot about the audience, because this is not an Alan Partridge audience. It's not even a Steve Coogan audience. It's a comic relief, like, absolutely
like,
broad
keep
strokes.
Keep it light.
Mrs. Brown's Boys, like, yeah, like, just TV dinners.
You're saying it's lowest common denominator.
Someone's generalising.
Well, no, I just think, you know,
oh God, it's the feedback. Entitled Southerner. back to you, Adam.
You probably like to drink champagne for breakfast on Christmas morning.
No, I guess I do.
Don't we all?
Yeah. But, soft Southerners, a lot of you.
But you know what I mean? It's not his audience, and so the subtlety of some of these jokes is not
goes over everyone's heads.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, to be fair, if you look on, whilst kind of going against what I said earlier, he hasn't really been on the TV properly since 1997. It's just been these kind of tiny
sporadic
little
appearances.
In the Partridgeverse, that is.
Partridgeverse.
A bit more about those Comic Relief t-shirts that had run out. He confirms that they're made in sweatshops, which are overseen directly by Richard Curtis. That was a very nice touch. And then goes on to talk another reference to Jamiroquai. We mentioned he's made a few before, describing him as a hat-wearing pretend environmentalist.
That's so Jamiroquai. I did think it's almost like a hit list of people that Alan hates that he's going through here, or is it people that Coogan hates? It's kind of that thing we don't quite know.
Yeah,
and certainly more successful than Alan is.
That's true.
Yes,
yeah,
very
yeah.
true.
Because it's Michael Flatley, it's JK from Jamiroquai, it's Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen. Who else is some of Westlife mentioned as well? I think?
Oh, Brian McFadden. He said it's something to do with him trying to offer something for the charity auction, but nobody asked him to.
that's great. Gag.
In the same segment where Alan announces that he's giving away a pair of his Umbro shorts, but unfortunately the stitched-in genital hammock finally gave way last week, which I like because it basically means he's throwing out an old pair of shorts. Yeah. Isn't he? This would have gone in the bin otherwise.
I also like the term genital hammock.
I think they're playing a Great Escape Festival next year.
He talks about homeless people and says the homeless, or tramps as they used to be called.
And then outs his sisters having just had a hysterectomy as well, which I thought was
that goes quite
classless.
Dark, and I think that really doesn't get any reaction at all from the audience.
His sister.
He
doesn't have a sister, according to iPartridge. He's very much positioned as an only child, isn't he?
That's true. Well, I mean...
But I think the thing about that is...
Sister-in-law?
The thing about, does he have a sister, but he just hasn't mentioned her to make it a bit more misery-lit, like he's an only child?
But can we agree that there's almost no reference, if just no reference to her in iPartridge?
Yeah, I think it's very scant, if anything. Fine. Yeah, this bit just... It feels a bit like good stand-up bombing. I feel like it's not... What he's saying is funny.
Is it even that funny, though?
I think it's funnier than the reaction it's getting.
I think so, yeah. I agree.
And he also says he'd like to inject himself into Kate Adie.
Yeah, there's a bit of a direct contradiction here. He says the only heroine I'd like to inject myself into is Kate Adie. But then he also says that she's off probably smuggling herself into Afghanistan. She's probably off smuggling herself into Afghanistan disguised as a woman. So I thought, on the one hand, it sounds like he fancies her, and then he's saying that she's unattractive.
Yeah, Kate Adie
it just
again?
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I don't know that.
She's a well-known news reporter, often in war zones, etc.
Right. And the phrase there, well-known, like you two have no idea.
Well known in the world of news reporting, that way. That's kind of all I had for that specific
that's part
bit.
One.
Although he does say that, you know, these days tramps are no longer all Scottish, which I think is pretty horrendous.
That's really bad. Very funny.
But when he comes back, this is the other bit that's online. Is obviously he's interviewing the Milky Bar Kid.
I think this is basically it's a two-part segment. Yes. So you've got him listing like this stuff, charity auction, and then you've got the Simon Pegg interview.
Yeah. So the Milky Bar Kid is all grown up, but arguably perhaps not strong and tough.
Very true.
Played very well by Simon Pegg. Yep. I thought it was a great bit of acting from him.
Well, it's very well acted to the point where I think if somebody tuned in and didn't know who Simon Pegg was and had no awareness of Alan Partridge being a fictional character, they might actually think, what the fuck is going on here?
And this bit is, you can also find another version of this Milky Bar Kid interview on the Cream of British Comedy release, which I guess is probably taken from one of Steve's stand-up shows, I think.
Have you watched that one as well?
I haven't watched all of it. I just know that it's longer, and I think it goes into a bit more of the traumatic detail.
So it's not necessarily verbatim the same.
No, I don't think it's exactly the same.
But it's him and Simon Pegg kind of redoing the same
exactly
thing.
Yeah, right. Slightly different outfits, but similar feel.
Yeah, so the Cream of British Comedy, that was released in 2005, so I think that was a DVD to raise money for charity as well.
Right. Yeah. So same year as this, basically. Yeah.
In fact, we posted a picture of, because the cover of that DVD is Alan with a beard. So that's we posted that on our socials.
It's the very rare Richard Hammond goatee years.
Yeah.
Simon Pegg, it becomes, you know, what's meant to be a frothy interview about the fun of being a Nestlé mascot. Basically, it turns out that the Milky Buckets had an absolute breakdown.
It goes quite dark quite quickly,
doesn't
it?
Sold himself for sex, stole from people.
Well, I made a list. So he started to drink at age 12. His father stole all his money. He started a band that failed almost immediately. He turned to drugs and then started selling his body for sex. And basically, anybody he put his trust in just fucked him over.
Yep.
So that's nice and cheery, isn't it?
To which Alan asks, did you ever wear the Milky Bucky costume while whoring?
And it turns out, yes, he had.
Alan also discovers during the course of this interview that, obviously that the Milky Bucky is gay, which he tries to deal with as best he can. But
two gay guys, go for it.
Is this the debut of Gaiman as well from Alan?
I'm not sure.
I don't know if it's a debut, but it's consistent.
Yeah.
He also finds out in this conversation that Graham Norton's gay in 2005. How did anyone get to 2005 and think Graham Norton was straight?
Nick's just pointed to my notes here. It is good. Because basically, Alan's like, you're gay. Two gay guys, go for it. I'm panicking.
Self-confessed. Yeah.
Peg nearly corpses in this as well.
Really?
The mentions of both poppers and Oklahomos.
Oh, what do you do to relax, apart from poppers?
Yeah.
And Oklahomo is actually very, very good.
It's great.
I laughed at that.
What I didn't get was there's a bit here where Alan is reading clearly a prepared question about a hypothetical gay scenario, but at the start of the interview he didn't know the Milky Bar Kid was gay, so how would he have that question?
I don't think it is prepared. I don't think it is prepared, because doesn't Simon Pegg's character say, what are you actually asking? Then he goes, I don't know.
Oh, that's true.
So I don't think it's written down. He just has a clipboard.
Is that before or after he's forced him to put on a hat and sing the Milky Bar song as well?
Yeah, very lackluster performance.
Again, I thought that was so dark, because the Milky Bar Kid is like almost in tears at this point.
Yeah. And it's sort of like he's been detailing a life where he's been taken advantage of and abused. And I mean, that's kind of what's happening.
And then
here,
Alan just adds another thing to the pile. Yeah.
But then there is a glimmer of hope as Alan basically admits that he is his friend, because this has got so dark, he's got to give him something.
He's got to bring it back somehow.
And then you have possibly the first instance of somebody wanting to go away for a drink and a holiday with Alan more than Alan wants to go, where Simon Pegg's character
Alan does not want to do this.
Desperately trying to get him to go caravanning. And,
but the key thing here is that Simon Pegg, or the Milky Bar Kid, wants to do more than just caravanning.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly does.
So does he want to go caravanning with Alan because he knows Alan has been living in a static home? That's what I wondered.
I just think it's a coincidence. He just goes, you have access to a caravan, it's static.
I think he wants to go away with Alan, and the method he's perhaps picked, because he knows that Alan's in a static caravan.
And that's kind of the end of the segment, really, isn't it, for that year, I think.
Yes.
I mean, my summary note on this was, to be honest, this whole year, I generally didn't think it was that funny. I didn't think there were that many laughs, and I think a lot of the big laughs rest on Alan's homophobia and lack of understanding of the gay community.
Bearing in mind,
it's a bit limiting, I think.
Yeah, and bearing in mind that his kind of his stand-up went down so badly live with a Comic Relief audience, this bit is extremely dark to put in front of basically a live audience of mums and dads who are there to see Steps and Michael McIntyre.
I mean, bearing in mind that Comic Relief goes on until the early hours, we're not quite sure about what time this actually
broadcasts. This could have been like 2 a.m.
So it could have been 2 a.m. So,
but then,
in that
case, no wonder the audience aren't laughing. They're knackered.
I don't think they would have opened with this at sort of 8 p.m. premium time.
It probably, but I mean, it could have been more like an 11 p.m. type thing or something, which for a TV audience it would still be decent.
It's definitely post-Watershed, isn't it?
Very much so. So let's fast forward to 2011, where it's sort of a Mid-Morning Matters version of Alan's contribution.
You say sort of Mid-Morning Matters. It is.
Yeah, Tom, you've got the Wikipedia page up there, I believe. What's Alan been up to between 2005 and 2011?
So we'll set the scene here. So Mid-Morning Matters Series 1 aired online initially in late 2010 into early 2011. And then it was on air on Sky Atlantic in 2012. So, this basically, Mid-Morning Matters being online was right up to him appearing on Comic Relief. So this is right on top of it. And also for the scene setting, this is pre-book as well.
So, yes, we're in the North Norfolk Digital Studio. Psychic Simon's there too, right?
Yep, and it opens with them laughing and Alan saying, look at my red nose, trying to be wacky and zany.
Quite a sly dig, I thought, at the sort of faux wackiness of red noses and also the sort of things people do for comic relief.
Yeah. Oh, well, remember, to close this segment, he says, I hate comic relief.
Psychic Simon, his hair's a bit longer, his beard's a bit longer, he's looking a bit dishevelled here, isn't he? Mm-hmm.
Well, he's been broadcasting with Alan, he's absolutely broken.
I thought they're both definitely trying to be wacky and they look a bit overexcited.
Yep. Yeah.
I also realise the red nose that Alan's wearing is the like tomato design one. That was the nose design in 1993.
Great spot.
Just dust that old guy off.
Great spot. And that goes in line with, I think later on in this segment, there's a reference, a caller maybe says that the colour of the red nose on the front of Alan's car has changed colour because he's had it for so long. I think it's orange now, it's faded.
Oh, it's Psychic Simon trying to stitch him up. He does not go for it.
So it's not one of the, because they also had a few years where they had the colour changing noses, a bit like global hypercolour t-shirts and stuff. Do you remember that?
I do, yeah.
So Alan's phone-in is obviously he's asking the listeners what have they been doing for comic relief. And you've got a couple that have been doing the standard bath of baked beans. But then we get a call from Pete in King's Lynn.
Pete.
Do you? Do you really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, he's been taking a bath of chocolate ready break with his golden retriever. But then as Alan continues to read, he realises that this email needs to be sent to the usual place, which is it needs to go directly to DCI Lambert. I mean, the implication there, Nick, is there's some kind of bestiality going on. So do you want to re-clarify your love of Pete in King's Lynn?
I was only enjoying it up to the bit where it was a golden retriever in a bath of chocolate ready break.
Yeah, and I think Alan was enjoying it. I think Alan was only enjoying it up to that point, and as he read further on, his eyes widened and he looked horrified.
I just hope that dog's okay.
We do not know. I mean, my note was dare we wildly speculate, but I don't think we need to.
Chocolate ready break's still a thing. I used to love ready break.
I don't know.
God, I could go for a bowl of chocolate ready break right now.
I've got good news for you, Nick. Chocolate ready break is very much still available.
Excellent.
Dinner
sorted.
I just had a quick Google, and you can get 6 sachets of chocolate ready break for £1.50.
From Waitrose?
I don't know. No, it'd be Ocado, but...
That's still fine.
Mm. Shortly after that, a man's rung in who's done some sort of compacted cheese stunt. I've just got compacted cheese
I think he's made a statue out of compacted cheese.
That's the one.
Which he has auctioned for £150, and the caller says, all of which goes to Comet Relief once he's covered his costs. Yes. Do we need to delve into that further?
Well, Alan feels the need to delve into it further. Yeah,
and quite rightly so, I think.
I won't run you through the whole maths because it's very dull, but basically the net profit is minus £172.
The guy's taken time off work, isn't he?
Yeah, and he then gets very confused.
He's taken 2 days off work to make it.
And he's so stupid that he thinks that actually Comic Relief will be the ones bearing the brunt of that loss. He doesn't realise.
No, better than that, he says those poor kids will they have to pay for it.
Oh yeah.
Do you want to speculate?
Oh, so I think he's like, it cost him £150 and he's taking 2 days off work, but I think he says that he actually sold it for £20, and Alan's like, well, is that going to go to Comic Relief? He says, I've spent it.
Yeah. But he then goes a bit odd and says, I saw you once, Alan, in front of a garden centre, and that's about it.
Yeah. Oh, and he also says that he lives alone. Just throwing that information in there.
I mean, the callers at this point are genuinely beneath Alan, which is really saying something.
Yeah.
What do you reckon the best cheese would be to use for that? I'm going to go with cheddar.
You're looking for...
I think that's going to have good structural integrity.
Yeah, structural integrity, but malleable.
Yeah, I think cheddar then.
Mm-hmm.
Good, I'm glad we've...
never Purina.
Do we need to talk about the next caller who's organised a naked football match for Comic Relief?
Yep, sounds like a lot of fun until you find out that there's also women and children have been recruited. And it's another one that's been passed straight onto BCI Lambert.
So, again, much like Nick being excited about a dog and some chocolate ready break earlier, Simon is initially excited. He's like, he's trying to be a bit of a lad about it. Yeah. He's like, oh, mixed football, I hope. And Alan's like,
twirling my moustache. He's jumbling.
Obviously, the implication, it's mixed between men and women. It's a bit sexy, but it's men, women, and children. So, again, Simon is asked to leave the studio and give that email to Susan to send straight on to the attention of DCI Lambert.
Now, obviously, in this episode, he's passed two things over to DCI. Lambert, are we to believe that this is a regular thing and that he's having to do this pretty
Absolutely.
Much every week?
Well, yeah, I mean, he does say send email number 5 to the usual place. We've got another. So, yes, this is clearly happening.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At the start of part two of the 2011 Comic Relief, Alan is basically having it's a very meta discussion, a hypothetical argument with the concept of poverty, but it becomes apparent as he goes on that he's less talking to poverty and more talking to travellers. He's getting angrier and angrier with poverty, but then he ends up suggesting that the poverty is actually on land that doesn't belong to it and that it should go to Southend.
It's things like, this is private property, clear up your stuff, you're not wanted. Southend, there's plenty of waste around there.
Yeah, poverty.
Wow. Oh, that's so good. And then travelling stuff is some of my favourite stuff that he does.
Yep.
And again, it is a very consistent trope, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
He hates travellers.
Yeah. A deeply awkward cut then to solemn facts about Africa, but he's using his regular fact attack sting, which basically just goes, fact attack, with then about 8 gunshots.
Miming is amazing. And also the last shot is like there's an imaginary assailant behind him that he just kind of turns around to shoot.
But it's the pause as well that's so good.
I think like in his head he's kind of reacting some James Bond type scenario, isn't he?
As the gunshots ring out, it's Ladysmith Black Mambazo in the background.
Before that as well, there's a really nice little moment where it's excellent Tim Key work here, where Alan says 2 packets of crisps and a pint of lager, and Simon does the other way round gesture with his arms. Yeah, it's great.
But sadly, Psychic Simon is not in the good books for long. The first fact he reads out: every year, famine in Africa kills X children. Because he's not filled in the fact himself, and he then tries to justify it by saying he thought it was Roman numerals, as in famine only kills 10 children a year.
Yeah, and you said that the music here, it's obviously from Paul Simon Graceland. That it's just
I said Ladysmith Black Mambazo. Oh,
I think they feature on it. They've featured artists on it.
That's how they got
album.
Massive.
I take it wrong. I was absolutely correct.
It's fine. So that album was obviously massive in kind of like late 80s and went on to sell like over 60 million copies. But I just think this is it's a really great piece of detail where Alan's kind of crass thinking. It's like, oh, we're dealing with Africa, so we need some music that's got an African influence. But instead of going with like a purely African artist, he's gone for Paul Simon.
And then you get the line that you used in the intro. Do you think Richard Curtis would get out of bed for 10 dead kids?
And Alan's like really pissed off that Simon would even think that as well. It's great.
The look on his face as he introduces a special celebrity guest is so funny, because it's like when you find out who it is, you can see how much fun he's having with it. It's awful.
You know what? They're a bit like kids at this point, aren't they? Like they think we've come up with a really funny idea. Everyone's going to love this. It's going
to
be hilarious.
It's quite funny, to be fair.
I mean, it is funny, but
not for his reasons.
But you know, in like kind of IRL, like it's obviously it's so bad taste.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's
and
great.
So yes, the special guest is basically Psychic Simon managing a puppet of Abu Hamza,
the boss-eyed Muslim cleric with a hook for a hand.
Yeah. Give him his full
and
name.
He uses the exact same description in Mid-Morning Masses as well.
I don't understand how they can have gone to all the effort of getting this very detailed puppet made.
Yeah.
Yet Simon has had haven't scripted it. He's crippling himself in a stress position on the floor trying to hold this puppet up.
And if you're watching it on the webcam from home, you can clearly see Psychic Simon on the floor.
I love the shot when you can't see him, so it is just Alan talking to a puppet. That sort of really makes me laugh.
And it ties back obviously to an episode of Mid-Morning Matters where they're having a discussion off air about Abu Hamza and what you would add instead of a hook onto his hand. So Abu Hamza is obviously very much the terrorist, or not terrorist,
you say terrorist du jour of 2011.
The cleric of choice.
So with the lack of scripting for this part, like all Simon could think of to say that's funny is just making the puppet say beans and he starts laughing to himself.
So I mean, that is funny. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, beans are always funny.
It genuinely is a scene that just sort of gently dismantles itself towards the end. And then at the very end, well, I would say a split second before it cuts away, Simon has a quick bit of inspiration, just goes, "Death to the West."
I know.
Which is amazing.
And that's the end.
I mean, it's again, it's so bad taste, but it's brilliant. Yeah, the only thing we've missed out before this segment ends is obviously Alan has the first of two massive nosebleeds here. And obviously we know from the book that Alan is very prone to nosebleeds. He's got a very sensitive nose, so probably having the older comic relief red nose has prompted that.
And then, yeah, his nose comes back to cause even more havoc in the next scene, which opens. I noticed that he's again, he's trying to work some product placement in with his Turner's Kitchen Solutions t-shirt that
so
he's wearing.
So is that the second appearance of Turner's Kitchen Solutions?
I think so. I think they're also mentioned in the book. They're mentioned all over the place. I think they get quite a few references.
Only the company that Kitchen Planet wishes it was.
So Sister Catherine is his guest, obviously. A nun. He immediately refers to Irish nuns' mistreatment of pregnant women in the 50s.
Hitting them specifically.
Yes, well, yes. Kind of fact checking and cross referencing this
Philomena vibe.
Yes, this would have been produced around the same time that Coogan was first working on Philomena, which came out in 2013. So it's likely he was aware of the issues, and that's why it's referenced. Totally.
Philomena is great as well.
Yes, just fantastic.
Can I shock you? I haven't seen it.
Really?
It's on the list.
Oh,
it's
always, always add to list.
Yeah. Very much.
You should watch it. It's very good.
Maybe I'll watch it tonight.
And he says they've got a check for £200 for her, which is more, Alan says, than the average African earns in the BBC canteen.
Yeah,
which is very good. Close to the bone.
But then, whilst he's saying that, Simon just says a month. In the background as well.
And he poses the question to Sister Catherine: Sting, Bono, Geldof, help or hindrance? I was going to say, question to the group, which of them, Paul, please can you put those three in order of who you'd rather share an Italian meal with?
I've also got three questions based around that trio, so let's do yours and then do
Bono, Geldof and Sting.
Sting for me.
I think I'd probably go Sting, Bono, Geldof.
Are we ranking them?
Yeah.
Sting, Geldof, Bonio.
Yep, correct. That's what I go for.
I think I'd go Geldof. I think he'd be a laugh on a night out having a meal. Probably Sting. Bono's going to be last.
No one wants Bono.
Yeah, on retrospect, you're right. You're absolutely right. Bono is last.
So my questions to the group were, who would you rather go on a charity fundraiser with out of those three?
Same order, I think.
Yeah, probably same
order. I think Geldof would bring the enthusiasm because he's got more.
Give us your fucking money! Yeah.
I'm confident as well, if you went out for an Italian meal with Bono, you would have to pay.
Yeah, he's got tax to avoid, doesn't he?
Exactly.
Allegedly. Allegedly.
You'd end up in an argument because apparently he only pays the service charge through the Cayman Islands.
Yeah, exactly. And he's got a bloody voucher.
Bono, pick a voucher card away.
Next question, quickfire. Sting, Bono, Geldof. Question to the group. Who would you rather record a podcast with?
Sting. Yeah, Sting. I think it's the same order for everything, isn't it?
A lot of Sting going on here.
I don't like Geldof. I don't like Bono.
I'd say Bono, though, because I think it would be, he's got more stories.
Maybe. But you'd have to travel to him as well.
and he won't cover costs.
Yeah. Final question for the group. Sting, Bono, Geldof, who would you rather be stuck in a lift with?
Sting.
Sting.
Oh, Sting. Hang on. Has Sting got a lute?
Or, I mean, I've not specified, so that's your choice.
If it's Sam's instrument, Sting.
Yeah, because he might just go and meditate and shut up and go in the corner.
If I'm in with him and he starts playing Fields of Gold on a lute, I'm going to go absolutely insane.
Wait a minute.
I'm climbing out of the lift, John McClane style.
Stuck in a lift. I reckon Geldof, out of those three people, is going to be able to get out of that situation the best out of the other two.
I reckon Sting's quite hench, you know.
Really?
Yeah, he does a lot of yoga and
I don't reckon he's practical like Geldof. I reckon Geldof is practical. We know how to, like, undo that.
Yeah, but surely Bono would just, like, call some extra special security company and send
if we've got
over.
Phones, then we're fine.
Well, why have you not got a phone? Who said you've not got a phone? I've not said you've not got a phone.
I assume that I haven't got a phone.
You're stuck in a lift, that's all I'm saying.
All right, I'm calling the lift emergency.
Okay, fine, that'll do.
Yeah, just get Bono to phone up. I don't know, Sean Connery or someone.
He'll try to reverse the charges, though.
Yeah. It's a reverse charges call to Sean Connery. Is that Bono again? Don't accept the charges.
I'm keen to explore this rabbit hole further, but we probably should get back to Alan.
We need to get back to the studio where Alan is coughing blood all over a nun.
He sneezes, but it's, I don't know, one of the weaker parts of it. It doesn't really kind of...
I think that bit does I think the Mid-Morning Matters one is brilliant, but I think the sneeze is kind of like, it's so hammy, like the way it's done.
Yeah. The nosebleed before worked, that was fine, and this is just taking it a bit too far.
Obviously, the nosebleed is put in segment one to lead to this being kind of like the comic payoff.
Yeah. And the complaints about the red nose being uncomfortable are in there.
It's all in there. It's all in there. But yeah, he's got a flex on a wimple.
Yes, great line.
That's a nun's headdress, by the way. I did have to check.
Yeah, me too. I like that he sneezes on her and immediately goes, "Shit, sister." And you can see there's a very quick angle where you can see that he's holding something outside of his nose as well. It's quite obvious there's a little
explosive bag.
This whole section didn't do very much.
Wimple as well, not only a nun's headdress, but also a village in Devon. Wimple fact for you there.
Good to know.
Mm-hmm. And he says to the camera, I'm a bit confused by this. He looks, I guess it's at the viewer, and he says, "You got what you wanted, blood on the carpet, or better, blood on a nun." And I sort of thought, is he talking to the producers because they asked him to grill the nun a bit, or is he talking to sort of a generic demanding viewer?
I think that might almost be aimed at the BBC, because I think there's blood on the carpet. That was a reference. There's quite an infamous documentary about Radio 1 reshuffling that was called Blood on the Carpet, about kind of the switch into the Matthew Bannister years. So that's the only thing that I could think that was referencing, but
I'm sure,
it doesn't really make sense.
I'm sure we'll get feedback on the emails.
Somebody will correct us.
This is going to be like when we didn't know where Scissor Dial was from all over again.
We do now, and that's the important thing.
Sorry, in advance,
there's probably
everyone.
Like a famous play called Blood on the Carpet that we've never heard of, where a man sneezes on a nun.
That brings me to the end of this year. How about anyone else?
I just love the fact it ends with Alan just saying to the nun, "I hate comic relief,"
because he does.
And then Psychic Simon in the background, he looks absolutely shell shocked about what's just happened in front of him.
Nothing else from me.
Which brings us to the most recent comic relief contribution in 2017. So one thing to note is that the credits mark this out as a Pear Tree charitable production. Yet another wing on the Pear Tree Productions label there. Presumably so it's tax deductible, I would imagine. I don't know.
She's saying he's like Bono.
Yeah, got some advice from Bono.
It's quite nice. One thing's quite nice at the start of this, and it does kind of summarise all of the comic reliefs that led us up to this point as well.
As he sort of says by his own admission, it's an easy way for him to not really get involved, but appear like
is it Alan Partridge's comic relief Stonkers?
Which he repeats every time as well.
Yeah, I love.
Just so good.
Does anyone remember the Stonk, the Red Nose Day song by Hale and Pace?
Do
the Stonk to the rhythm of the honky tonk. Well, stick a red nose on your conk and let's stonk.
I was very much. I reckon I was probably 3 or 4 when that came out. You were probably tearing up the dance floor in your mid-30s.
Yep, that's right. I had the moves.
Do not remember.
A good thing about this being a Pear Tree charitable production is, much like Scissor Dial that came out around the same time, it's an excuse for them to have a hand of Alan in all of the editing choices, in the music choices and so on. So, for example, the shot of Comic Relief calling him is obviously something, is how he imagines the people at Comic Relief to look like, with a goatee and a flat cap while they're in an office on the phone.
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought. Like, I would say the clips here are all deliberately rubbish. So I guess that's a Pear Tree Productions gag, isn't it? They've just selected the worst footage possible.
Yeah, the voiceovers are very funny.
Yeah, the voiceovers are funny, but I think that's the joke.
And also, there were no gags as well.
It's very much a sort of Harry Hill TV burp, "You've been framed for that," which I thought was interesting, in that it's one of the few TV formats that Alan's never been involved with, is a clip show.
Well, I wondered, is it almost having a clip-based segment? It's a bit like, are they trying to recreate the Alan Partridge's World Cup roundup kind of magic? I also did wonder whether... if Coogan was not available to record, to do something on camera, so he might have been quite busy working on other projects at this time.
Then why bother?
It's definitely something that required less time on his part.
Well, exactly. Literally phone it in. So I just
farm it out to the Gibbons. Tell me where I need to turn up. 10 minutes done.
There's a nice touch where they cut to Noel Edmonds, but it's actually Julian Assange and Mr. Blobby.
Yes, that's very good. Yeah, I like that a lot.
And also a fun dig at Noel Edmonds with a voiceover says he keeps the gun recipe close to his chest, as well as some of his tax arrangements.
So you're saying he's like Bono, allegedly.
Allegedly.
And he's almost back to the quality of his day-to-day sports reporting when he's doing narrating on the keepy uppy section of this, where he's just going knee, 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 right foot, right foot. Oh, he's lost it.
He's literally saying what he.
I like
literally
that.
Saying
what
he says. A few other choice quotes. He goes off on a tangent saying, "I only waxed myself completely smooth once on a school trip to Anglesey because some boys told me to." They obviously cover the classic having a bath of beans. He says, "Never ever fall asleep in beans; it will stain your skin." And also talks about lady flavoured beans.
But also, if you do get a slag's tan from a bath of beans, presumably that wouldn't be on the face. So it would just be like neck down.
If you fall asleep, potentially.
Yeah, yeah. It might slide down into
it. Then you might drown in a bath of beans.
So in that case, you'd need to wear a snorkel to keep yourself safe. So you'd have like reverse panda eyes of a slag's tan.
Should we try this out for Comic Relief next time?
Yeah, I think Adam's keen. Yeah.
I'll give it some thought.
I'll think about it.
It's also, I guess, him kind of sliding into sort of Dennis Norden, It Will Be Alright on the Night territory, yeah, for people mm-hmm. who remember that. And I did think this is, in a similar way, we sort of see his evolution through this as we were talking on the Mid-Morning Matters episodes about how he's changed. He started out very much as a sort of, as an Edmonds, manic running around the house, Noel's house party, yeah, kind of in your face, slightly violent presenting style, but he's basically morphing into Wogan, isn't he? A sort of a latter day kind of.
He wishes he was one tenth of Wogan.
I mean, I know he's no Wogan, but you know, it's kind of like he'll say some stupid things, but you'll let him off because he's the nation's sweetheart.
Dennis Norden always used to present those shows with a clipboard that he would never refer back to.
Very true.
Didn't Dennis Norden have like a range of sources or something like that? A range of.
You're thinking about Barry Norman. Grossman. You're thinking.
Yeah.
Of.
I am. Yeah.
Oh, no. He does his pickled onions, or is that Barry Norman?
That's Barry Norman.
It's Barry Norman.
No. Barry Norman's pickled onions.
It's salad dressing.
No, that's
Paul Newman.
That's Paul Newman.
Range of mayonnaises? That's Hellman's.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop.
Ketchups?
Ainsley Harriott does his own range of couscous.
Yes, yep, that's right.
Very good.
Pasta gravy sauce. And we're back to Alan.
Yeah.
Action man bow tie.
And I think that brings us to the end of Alan's Comic Relief contributions to date, does it not?
I think it does. I mean, like we said, I think it's quite a genius way, perhaps just by sheer chance, that they've managed to keep Alan relevant and visible in the years when the character hasn't been in the main show, really. Mm-hmm. It's been quite fun to go back and look at all these clips.
Oh, there's something of a mixed bag when it comes to which ones work and which ones don't.
Yeah, I mean, I think the quality is a bit hit and miss. I mean, out of interest, did anybody ever see any of these live on the Comic Relief years?
I definitely saw a few. There would have been a few years, probably around the sort of 2005 mark, where I would have tuned into Comic Relief for about half an hour. They would have said, "Alan's coming up," and I would have then sat there glued to the TV for about 3.5 hours waiting for this 5 minute clip to come up.
Yeah, they'll always keep milking it. Yep. I mean, I think the only ones I actually saw were the 95 and the 2017 ones.
Mm. I just never really watched Comic Relief.
Yeah, I don't really watch Comic Relief either. Irrespective of whether my comedy heroes were on there, I probably wouldn't watch it. You're waiting a long time to get some gold. I'm not saying it's not a worthy cause, but
next up we have Mrs. Brown's Boys.
Yeah,
click off. Yeah. And is it worth discussing our favourite and least favourite Comic Relief?
For me, 95 is the favourite, and the least favourite is probably 2005 with him and Simon Pegg.
I would agree. I think for me, 2000. Well, you know what? I don't like 2005 or 2017. I think they are a bit of a letdown.
I think my favourite is probably 2001, although it's quite quick. You've got Michael, you've got Peter. I think Peter Kay is. I think everyone's got a favourite era of Peter Kay, much like the Beatles. I think mine is very much Phoenix Knights, and I feel like this is kind of, you know, it's adjacent to a Phoenix Knights type character.
Yeah. I think it's a toss up. I think that the first three, the 95, 99, 2001, I mean, I'm choosing half of them there, but I think those ones are all absolute brilliant pieces of departure.
Yeah. My favourite is 99. I'm shocked that no one else has gone, "Yes, it's 1999. I think that's absolutely the best one.
Oh, Kate Bush medley.
Yeah. And all the stuff in the studio. I genuinely think that is some of the best Partridge that there has ever been. That 18-minute section.
I guess it's
gold.
A bit more. There's a bit more heft to it because that's like a 20-minute segment all in, isn't it? Where the other ones are probably like 5 or 6 minutes.
There's time for things to develop and things to build a little bit. I genuinely think it's some of the strongest work he's done.
It's just let down by the Brian Ferry bit for me. I don't think that really lands, but the rest of it, I agree, is gold. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of our 2-part Comic Relief special. Thanks very much for joining us. If you've got any thoughts on any of Alan's Comic Relief output, then please do get in touch. ThePartridgePod@gmail.com, on Facebook. It's facebook.com/ThePartridgePod. at the Partridge Pod at Twitter and at Monkey Tennis Pod on Instagram. Don't forget, you can find all of these clips of Comic Relief on YouTube, well, almost all of them, so do watch and enjoy.
I think we'll share them on our socials as well.
It is worth saying the quality of some of these clips is varied.
Especially, was it the 2005 one, the Simon Pegg one?
It's like you're watching it on a postage stamp. It's ridiculous.
Sub VHS quality, but we did our best and you can too. So we'll be back in the coming months with even more Partridge. As you know, there's a new series of Partridge hitting the BBC at some point this year, so I'm sure we'll be back to talk about that and many other things. But from all of us for now at Monkey Tennis, thanks and goodbye.
See ya.
Goodbye.
Monkey Tennis? This is great banter.
Hot ham.
Monkey Tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Are you on an E? Monkey Tennis?
Yeah.
I'm spinning plates here, mate, I'll be honest. Monkey Tennis?
There have been times when I've been more rubbery than turgid.
Monkey Tennis?
Tits bits. Tit bits.
Yes. It's just an idiom.
You're an idiot.
Ooh, that's mustard. Monkey Tennis?
Sustaining and maintaining our core listenership in an increasingly fragmented marketplace.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.